I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Going to get back into the NBA playoffs in just a minute, but a lot of you weighing in on this boxing versus golf topic, so I will let you have the floor before we transition back to hoops. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. How about Tommy in Jackson, Mississippi? Tommy, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, what's going on, man?
What's up, Tommy?
Nothing much. This morning, I let the dogs out, and then I heard your KD versus Steph conversation, and I was like, I can't go back to bed. I think that's asking either a filet mignon or lobster. I think I'd take KD today to build a team, but maybe Steph, you know, to add a piece. But to the golf and boxing, I'm much a bigger fan of golf just because it's so much more accessible. I mean, you have golf from February to, what, September, October, and you know, you're right there by the players. You saw yesterday when Tiger hit it, like double-crossed it and went over there. I mean, those people are, like, right close to them. I got to go to the 2003 British Open, and Tiger did the same thing. He hit it off a mound, and, I'm right there 5 feet from one of the great golfers. And, you know, I've been watching Tiger and Phil for 20 years. It's kind of like you grow up with them, because golf is such a long sport. And boxing reminds me a lot more of maybe horse racing, where you have like two or three really good ones a year, you know, and maybe you do the pay-per-view or go out to the bar or something like that. But, man, I'm such a bigger fan of golf. I love it.
Well, the point I'll give you is the accessibility point. Not from like to participate in, but from to watch. Like, if you're a casual fan of both, right? Let's say you're a casual fan of boxing and a casual fan of golf. You're probably more likely to consume golf than boxing, because there are hurdles to consuming the boxing. You have to pay for the pay-per-view or have Showtime or, you know, stream DAZN, you know, wherever that is coming from. If you are a casual fan and there's a golf tournament on, you turn on your TV. So that is a point in that regard. How about Earl in Wisconsin? Earl, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Good morning, Robin.
What's going on, Earl?
Not much. Rainy. It's dreary. But just wanted to say I love both sports, but I prefer golf because it's more of a gentleman finesse game. And I think as far as similarities, there are similarities, especially when it comes to, like, strategy and pacing and aggressiveness. If you think about it, if you're boxing or behind in a golf match, you have to be generally more aggressive. But if you're ahead, maybe you want to be more conservative. Like, if you remember back, Muhammad Ali used the rope-a-dope to win over Foreman. And if you're a golfer who's ahead by many strokes, maybe you're just going to be playing for par just so you don't blow the lead yourself, you know. So I think there are times when both games require a certain amount of finesse and a strategy and pacing.
Well, yeah, I mean, somebody brought it up. They're both individual sports, so in that way they're similar. So you're competing for yourself, you're in your own head or not. Somebody also brought up the similarity of a caddy and a cornerman or a trainer. You know, there are some similarities in that regard, and what you said about pace, that comes down to it being an individual thing. Aside from that, they couldn't be more different. but those two things, root things, do weave a similar tapestry, if you will. Ramon in Oregon. Ramon, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, what's up, Robert?
What's up, Ramon?
Hey, man, I can't believe this is even a debate. It's boxing, hands down. Wouldn't you rather be watching a pay-per-view?
Don't put your hands down when you're boxing. You know that.
Yeah, beer, barbecuing with your, you know, with your buddies, and watching a good pay-per-view fight rather than watching some guy swing a club and then walk 300 yards to the next hole.
Well, I mean, you and I agree. It's kind of always fun to put it that way, but you know, there are other people who would like, I don't know, enjoy the pace of that, or because they do it themselves. You know, and then you got to stay up so late to watch a fight too. There might be people who are out on that. I'm going to the fight tonight. I'm like, oh man, I'm not gonna get home till 2 o'clock in the morning.
When they sing the Star Spangled Banner, don't you get chills up your spine?
Well, that's not that part for me right now, but yeah, other aspects of the energy of a fight.
Yeah, it's definitely boxing hands down. Shouldn't even be a debate, man.
Well, it seems to be, are we about 50? We got to be close to 50-50, Anthony, right? I mean, this is not an official survey, but it's been relatively close to 50-50.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about Rob in Florida? Rob, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Morning, Robin.
How are you, Rob?
All right. You know, the luster, we lost the luster in boxing from the day of Sugar Ray Leonard and Hagler and Tommy Hearns. Oh, man, they were tremendous. Not to mention, we used to drive 2 hours to see Ali fight like Norton in those days for $10 in some gymnasium, and the TVs would go out in the middle of the fight. But I mean, it was so exciting in those days. But today, other than Tiger, the excitement is gone. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, some people would agree with that. But it's still a viable sport, and there are guys who are, making names for themselves in that sport at the same time. And part of the reason this is a conversation is because it does feel like the heavyweight division. That's kind of what was missing. The non-heavyweight divisions have actually been pretty strong for a while now, but the heavyweight division is not. And it does feel like there might be a mini renaissance of the heavyweight division at this moment.
Well, true. Like I said, like you're saying, it's coming along a bit, but man, those days of those guys, wow, nothing could match those days.
Oh, no. I mean, there was a time it was probably the biggest, you know, it was up there amongst the biggest sports. There was a time horse racing and boxing were the two biggest things. I think horse racing has been bypassed more so in the sense that it really is limited to a few dates in a year from a general populist standpoint. In fact, this year it's limited to one, right? Like the Kentucky Derby is the only time horse racing is going to matter this year, this calendar year, to the general sports fan, I think, because and it was great for them in a sense that it was a talking point the way that ended, but there's not a horse from there that's competing in the other big races, so it's like once a year. Boxing still has its events every month now. Let's go to Miles in Tuscaloosa. Miles, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, what's up, man?
What's good, Miles? How are you?
Good. For me, the biggest similarity is the technicality of the two, and honing in your hand-eye coordination, your feet work. But normally I would say golf. Grew up loving golf, playing golf. But watching Dante Wilder come up and feeling like you had the inside scoop, you know, because you knew him back in the day, and then now you see him when he comes home in his Lambo. He's at the gas station taking pictures with the kids and stuff. I don't know. He's just bigger than life down here. It's awesome to see.
Oh, I get. Yeah, and I wasn't thinking of your connection. He's from. Where's he from exactly?
He's from right outside Tuscaloosa, but I mean, you know, he Northport, but just a nice guy. Anytime you see him around, he's always cool to talk to, take a picture with, and then now to see him. So me, I got to stay boxing this weekend. Throughout my life has been golf.
But
I think there are more similarities with the technicality of the two.
Well, the craft that you're talking about, basically, right? You know, in golf, you have to perfect your swing. You have to make sure your mechanics are proper on each swing so that each swing is the same and you're getting the optimal result. Or you know, you're measuring the green for your putt or your approach shot. In boxing, like you mentioned, it's your footwork. It's your combinations. It's assessing your opponent and what he might throw and how you're going to defend. Yeah, so there, yes, in that sense, there are some similarities as far as getting your craft aligned perfectly and being prepared from a skill set standpoint. So that goes back to the individual aspect of it too. You know, you're in your own head. It's you versus the opponent in boxing. It's you versus the course in golf. So there are those similarities, and then there are the differences. One, you're swinging a club and walking around, and the other, you're punching someone and being punched, and really going to beyond the to the upper levels of cardio and the like. So very different, but the same in some ways, and it made for some, I hope for you, entertaining sports talk radio, which is the goal here. Back to the NBA coming up next. Steve Ashburner, senior writer at NBA.com, will join me. I'll ask him the question I asked you at the beginning of the show. Who's the better player, Kevin Durant or Steph Curry? Do we want to see Kevin Durant back for the finals against the Bucks? Is that when we want to see him return, or we want to try and see the Warriors do it without him? That's another interesting question to ask as we approach the NBA finals. I mean, I think we're already there, personally. It's going to be the Bucks and the Warriors. They're the two best teams. They've been the two best teams all year. They're on a collision course. So, best protect your neck. It's the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. You know, I wonder, would people want Kevin Durant back for the finals? Because the Warriors are arguably more entertaining to watch in their current form. They don't feel unfair. You're getting a throwback vibe to the Splash Brothers. But when it comes to the Bucks have been the best team all year, so do we want to see those two teams playing at their very best? I'm joined now to discuss that and other NBA topics. Steve Ashburner, senior writer at NBA.com. Steve, would you agree that it's a formality now, the rest of these conference finals, and we're headed to Bucks and Warriors in the NBA finals?
Only 20 teams in the history of best of seven series in NBA playoffs, only 20 teams have ever come back after losing the first two games. So, you know, it's not unheard of. Four of them have done it in the last 3 years, but LeBron's been on two of those teams, and one was a Boston team that was far superior to the Chicago team that took an early lead. I think it's a safe assumption.
You know, Milwaukee's starting to get the credit I think they've earned all year, and it took people a while to come around to it. The comparison I've used for them is not that they're the similar rosters, but or even necessarily completely similar styles, but they kind of remind me of the 2011 Mavericks in the sense of they're built around one singular force and then well-constructed otherwise with a bunch of very good players, if not great players. The 2011 Mavs were kind of Dirk and the 2001 All-Stars, and this year's Bucks team is kind of Giannis and a huge group of, you know, B or B-plus level players.
Yeah, you know, I think that's fair. I was thinking last night after the game, after I came back to the hotel, that compared to, you know, what we've seen a lot lately because of LeBron's dominance, where you got these veteran players that knew that the best way to, you know, pursue a ring was with LeBron, the role players, if you want to call them that, on Milwaukee, you know, they're taking a more active role than those guys who sort of joined up on Cleveland. I'm not saying the guys that were with the Cavaliers and LeBron, you know, were free riders, but you know, they had to perform in niches. They each had their role. They each had a little thing they did. LeBron was doing the heavy lifting. And this team has taken a lot of pride in extending leads when Antetokounmpo is on the bench. And they have done that more often than not, where you look at plus minuses, and a lot of times it's the the most notable ones. And I understand how that can be a faulty stat, but nonetheless, you know, those guys can put up some pretty big numbers. And the actual lead, when it's whether it's bench against bench or bench against the other guys, you know, two or three starters and a couple reserves. So they're more vibrant, involved veteran guys, you know, second tier players, in terms of we want to do this too. You know, Giannis is on his way up. He has not established himself like LeBron, but it's almost like they do have that dynamic. Well, I thought of the Orlando Magic in 2009 when they made it to the finals. You know, that was a one-in, four-out setup that Stan Van Gundy had with Dwight Howard. Now, just imagine Dwight Howard, you know, being Giannis, being able to do, you know, so many of the other things that Dwight Howard can't do.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're better players than the guys that were around LeBron outside of, you know, the star teammates that LeBron has had. But your point's well taken. They have a lot of length and they have a lot of shooting, and they're willing to let it fly. But they've certainly extended those leads when he's been sitting down. Robin Lundberg talking to Steve Ashburner, senior writer at NBA.com here on CBS Sports Radio. Now to the West and the Warriors. It's fascinating what's going on with them because, you know, since Durant got there, it sort of felt unfair to me. You know, you had a 73-win team and you added Durant. And then that led to topics within topics, whether, you know, Durant made the wrong move or who's the best player on the team. And it felt like Durant had taken that mantle of clearly and without argument the best player on that team this season. Yet all of a sudden he goes out and Steph goes right back to being the MVP Steph Curry. So it sort of feels like Steph was maybe a victim of his own selflessness in a way. And now we see that 73-win Warriors kind of team again out there, which leads to the natural question, who's actually better, Steph Curry or Kevin Durant?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, and we are having that sort of put in front of us right now. I mean, I look at it, and it makes me think of a situation. Say you're married, and your spouse has to go out of town for a week, and all of a sudden you're at home, and you're remembering things about your life before that union where, hey, I do like staying up late and flipping channels, or I do like eating peanut butter out of the jar. I mean, you remember things of that, man, that was me back then. And this is me now. And am I really happier? Is it better? It to me, it strikes me like that. I think that in a way, I would almost say that Steph Curry is the better player. Only in that he's a unique player in a way that Durant is not. I don't know that we've seen anybody quite like Steph Curry. When you factor in his shooting range, his accuracy from pretty much anywhere on the floor, some of the other things he brings in terms of setting the pace and the tone for his team, he's going to end up, if this, you know, trend continues, and whether it's early Steph or mid-career Steph that, you know, has yielded, I think, some of his game to Durant, he's going to end up, you know, as one of the top two or three point guards of all time. And Durant's going to be vying with a number of guys in the top 10 or top 15, I think, by the time things are done. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, you'd say, well, maybe Curry is the better player. I mean, you look at Durant and say, what does he lack? You know, his defense has gotten more respect, you know, in the last couple of years. Yeah, he's not a big bulky guy, but big bulk does not lend itself to today's game anyway. But I think just in terms of being different and special, and the back-to-back MVPs, which is forever a marker in his favor, you know, it's possible. And I think everybody's having a lot of fun sort of recalling those the Warrior teams of way back in 15 and 16. And it'll be interesting to see them have to shift gears again when Durant and even Cousins come back.
Yeah, we'll see how they deal with that, especially if they got to deal with the Milwaukee Bucks. Steve, appreciate your time this morning, man. Thanks for joining.
All right, thanks for having me on.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It is The Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. My family just attempted to FaceTime me right now, which they should know where I am. You know, I a few times made the request, hey, you know, when I'm live on the air, let's, you know. In fairness, this time I did call during one of the commercial breaks to get an update on something, so it was probably the call back.
Maybe they were listening to the show and they knew that you were in a break, so they decided to try to
wait till the end
FaceTime
of it.
You?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Let's go to Tom and Durant. Tom in El Paso talking about Kevin Durant. This is a call I can take on the air. What's going on, Tom?
Hey, Rob. How you doing, man?
I'm good, dude. How are you?
Not bad for Saturday.
Yeah.
Are you usually bad
on Saturdays?
Pardon me?
Are you usually bad on Saturdays? You said not bad for a Saturday. Isn't Saturday generally a good day?
Usually a lot of honeydews, you know?
Oh, I see. All right.
When you got Durant versus Steph Curry, you got to go with Durant. And I'll tell you why. Because LeBron basically uncovered the Warriors' kryptonite 4 years ago when the Cavs beat the Warriors. If you got a post player that's dominant and you got shooters all around him, then you can beat the Warriors. And that's what LeBron did 4 years ago, and that's what Milwaukee will do this year, because the matchup is the problem for the Warriors with a dominant post player. Now, Durant is what makes the Warriors totally invincible. This is a guy 7 feet tall. He shoots threes, he posts up, he blocks shots, he handles the ball, he does everything. So people have a fascination about Steph Curry because he's the little man's dream. Every little guy out here dreams that if I just go out and shoot 1,000 jump shots every day, I can turn into Steph Curry. And Durant is something that you have to acknowledge is different than you are. And you can't aspire to be him because he is genetically different than you.
You know, but here's the thing. There's some truth to that, and I think there is a way that people view Steph. But I think we really sleep on how gifted Steph is physically. You know, what he does is not normal. The shooting is not normal. And the genes he's coming from are not normal. His father played in the NBA. His brother plays in the NBA. His mother was a track star. I mean, I don't think Steph is as everyman as we make him out to be.
And you're exactly right. People do sleep on the fact that Steph has a genetic superiority when it's hand-eye coordination. But he's a little guy, so little guys all think we could be Steph,
yeah,
but we could never be KD. So KD is the key. And I predict that if it's Milwaukee versus Golden State without KD, Milwaukee does the same thing to Golden State that Cleveland did to Golden State 4 years ago. That is the kryptonite for Golden State. It's beautiful basketball, those guys running off screens and shooting three-pointers. But the fact is, if you get some lockdown defenders, Steph can't get you a shot in the last 10 seconds of the game.
You know, there's some truth to that, but I also have to push back a little bit. That series went to the final seconds of Game 7, and the Warriors were up 3-1 in that series. So, I mean, and it was the best player of all time they were going against. I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying, and against Milwaukee, that might be where they need Kevin Durant. And I also do think Kevin Durant is the better isolation player, meaning if I need one bucket, he's the guy I'm going to. But as far as impact on the entire game, game after game, it's hard to argue with the results when it comes to Steph. All right, time to get to everything I have not in another one. All right, Anthony, what's up first?
All right, so the Jets, they fired their general manager, Mike Maccagnan, this week, and apparently the Le'Veon Bell contract was a point of contention between Maccagnan and head coach Adam Gase. And now we have a report that the Jets are pursuing Peyton Manning as a replacement for Maccagnan. Should the Jets hire Peyton Manning as their general manager?
Sure, why not? You know, why not? I always say the best time to fire your GM is immediately after the draft. That's always the best time to do it. Right after free agency, right after the draft. Let him handle all that and then fire him. Ridiculous. But the one reason that I have no reason to know whether Peyton Manning would be good at the job or not, right? I mean, he clearly is a genius at the sport. That is without question. But there's no reason to know whether he'd actually be good in that position. However, if Adam Gase is your guy, and it appears that Adam Gase is the Jets' guy, he's the interim GM. He made a trade like immediately after all this went down. He and Peyton Manning are tight. So that would be the entryway there. Peyton Manning gives you a degree of credibility from a standpoint of what he's done in his career, where the media is probably going to give him a bit of a pass, at least to begin with. And he has a good working relationship with Gase already. So if Adam Gase is your guy, it doesn't bother me to hire Peyton Manning. But the Jets have a long way to go to convince people they know what they're doing, because that the type of moves they made this week were not the type of moves an organization that knows what it's doing makes.
And I know it was weird that the Jets waited till after the draft and free agency to fire Maccagnan. But at the same time, I mean, he didn't do anything that was like, I mean, he was universally praised for how he handled free agency, who he brought in. And then, I mean, a lot of people would say that he got the best player in the entire draft in Quinnen Williams, third overall. So, I mean, it is weird that they waited to when they did.
But at the same time, I feel like people are, from a merit standpoint.
Yeah, because I feel like people are saying, well, you know, they let him go through free agency and spend all that money, and they let him pick, you know, they let him handle the draft. But again, I mean, from everything I've seen, you know, people praise them for free agency. And I mean,
then why fire
much
him at all if that's the case? You know, like, the timing is just strange if you didn't think he was doing the job well, right? Like, that's because you generally don't fire people you think are doing a good job unless there's some sort of personal thing going on. So then it would indicate he's not doing the job well. And if you believe he's not doing the job well, then why is he doing the most important things for the job? But I get what you're saying.
So Dak Prescott said this week that he wants to be a Cowboy forever. The Cowboys reportedly okay paying Prescott a number that will approach $30 million annually. Is Dak Prescott the most important player on the Cowboys roster?
Yes. Yes. You know, is he the best player on the Cowboys roster? Probably not. But is he the most important? Sure. That we know quarterback is the most important position, and we know quarterbacks are hard to find. And I would say that Dak Prescott is an above average NFL starting quarterback. I'm not going to go too far in either. You know, I think with Dak, because he had such a good rookie year and because he plays for the Cowboys, things reached hysterical levels at various times. I think the proper definition of Dak Prescott is an above average starting quarterback. And that's pretty good. You know, most teams don't have that. So he may not be a franchise level, you know, altering things by himself kind of quarterback, but he's good enough to win with, and that's a difficult commodity to attain. So that's why he's going to get paid. And it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is after he gets paid, because, you know, every time a new contract is signed by a quarterback, it's like the biggest quarterback contract ever. So there'll be a lot of people going, how could you make Dak Prescott the highest paid quarterback ever, when every quarterback who signs a deal is the highest paid quarterback ever or something close to it. Look at Stafford and Ryan and, you know, the deals those guys signed. And I think he's on that level, if not better, than, you know, Matt Stafford.
Odell Beckham Jr., he left the Browns OTAs after day one. Freddie Kitchens, their head coach on OBJ, said that it's important for him to be mentally ready to be here. Do you have a problem with Odell missing OTAs?
I'm tired of, like, let's make these things voluntary or not voluntary, right? Like, do we have to have this discussion whenever a player doesn't show up for it anymore? Either you should have to show up for it, or you shouldn't have to show up for it. I'm tired of trying to figure out whether I believe that you should have to show up for it when you don't have to show up for it. Like, well, who am I to determine this? I don't know. If the coach is saying that, then maybe it's cause for minor, tiny concern, especially given that Beckham, you know, has had a little bit of drama follow him wherever he's been. However, I can't blow it out of proportion because we see guys, you know, Tom Brady don't show. I mean, Tom Brady's proven himself to a higher degree. I understand that. They're not the same. But I'm using him as an example because he's the first high-profile name I could think of who I know didn't show up. And we don't crush those guys. So either make it so guys have to show up or make it so they don't have to show up. Don't make it so I have to determine whether I need to worry about a guy showing up or not when he doesn't have to show up. I'm tired of that.
To college football, Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney downplayed talk of replacing Nick Saban at Alabama this week. Do you believe, Robin, one day Swinney will be the head coach of the Crimson Tide?
No. Why? Why does he need to replace Saban at Alabama when he's made Clemson Alabama? Hasn't he? Isn't Clemson Alabama now? I mean, aren't they the same? Isn't it 1A and 1B? Is there any difference between Clemson and Alabama anymore? I mean, it's not like Alabama. No, we have a lot of callers from like that area, so I really don't mean this with any disrespect. But it's not like Alabama is the place that people are looking to go. You know, you don't hear like free agents really considering to get as close to Alabama as possible. You know, that's not really the talk. So I just personally don't understand why. Now, Alabama is obviously a huge marquee college football program, and any coach would be super fortunate to have that job. But I just don't understand how it would be an upgrade for Swinney, who has turned Clemson in to Alabama.
Back to the NBA. So the Cavaliers, they have their head coach. They hired John Beilein this past week. Is this a good move for the Cavaliers?
Can I say I don't know? I mean, I don't know. He has a lot of people speaking very highly of him. He seems to know how to deal with people well, but he is unproven at the NBA level, and this is a wait and see thing. I mean, I've talked to a couple former NBA guys about it, and they seemed fairly positive on the hiring. So if they're an indication of how the players are going to receive it, that's a good sign for Cleveland. But I can't tell you with any degree of certainty whether it's going to work out or not. This is one of those ones where I'll say I don't know because I don't.
We got a report from NBC Sports this past week that said the 76ers could explore a Ben Simmons for LeBron James trade this summer. Would the 76ers and Lakers make such a crazy deal?
I can't imagine. I think LeBron James is the best player who ever lived. Everybody knows that. I would not trade Ben Simmons for LeBron James. You know, Ben Simmons has limitations, but he's 20-something years old. On a cost-controlled deal still at this point. And he's, even with those limitations, at worst, what, one of the 30 best players in the league? Probably better than that. So it would not make sense to trade Ben Simmons for LeBron James, I do not believe. That would be undervaluing Ben Simmons as an asset because with LeBron, you're looking at 2 years, right? Like, more or less 2 years. I guess you could make the case, value that championship window because they'd be elevated immediately to championship favorites probably with him on the roster. But it's just not a deal that makes sense. And I don't expect the Lakers to trade LeBron, and I don't expect the Sixers to trade Ben Simmons.
And finally, Robin, it looks like Robert Pattinson will play Bruce Wayne in the 2021 Batman movie directed by Matt Reeves. What say you?
I don't mind it so much. I mean, I don't even know this kid. I know he was in Twilight. Apparently, some people have said he's a good actor otherwise. So it's not like one of these things that makes me like throw up in my mouth or anything like that. I'll give him a chance. Batman's always been a tough character to play because I feel like people either nailed one half or the other half of it, like Bruce Wayne or Batman. Like I thought Christian Bale was a really good Bruce Wayne, maybe not as great a Batman, even though those movies were strong. And maybe the Batman part is hard to hit too because you are much more one note in that role. I do think what's one of the things that's interesting about that character, and you contrast it with, say, like Iron Man, is that Batman is who Bruce Wayne is, right? That's not the disguise. That's who he is. He's a sociopath. And Bruce Wayne is the disguise. While with Iron Man, Tony Stark is who he is, and Iron Man is a suit. But I guess my question, Anthony, would be more, are we ready for another Batman movie right at this moment? He's their most popular character, so I understand it. But there's been so many different variations and so many different, you know, incarnations of Batman. How are they going to differentiate it a little bit? Maybe they need to get the taste of the Batman versus Superman era out of their mouth as quickly as possible, and that's the reason.
And but also, that's why they're going with Pattinson. He's a younger guy. He's 33 years old, so a younger Batman, like Ben Affleck, obviously.
I think he falls enough of... I would not, in casting a lot of these roles, I would try to avoid casting people that you know, especially someone like Ben Affleck, who's like, when you see him, you go, oh, there's Ben Affleck. Not like, oh, there's this guy playing Batman, you know? And I think that's something, another thing that Marvel has done really well is cast guys, even if some of them have been famous, they're not like overwhelmingly famous at the time that they're cast. And that allows you to see them as the character first rather than the actor first playing the character. But we'll see how it works out. I mean, he's obviously their most popular character. Who are the villains?
Give the guy a chance. It sounds like it's going to be Catwoman and the Penguin, so just like in Batman Returns.
Yeah, well, that was the second one, the Tim Burton movies, right?
1992.
I'll be back same time and same place next week here on CBS Sports Radio. Ken Carman takes over right now.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.